Professor Pennell, are you recommending trusts? Why? Does the size of the estate matter? Along the same lines, are people interested in protecting gifts and inheritances from their children's creditors and future spouses? If so, what do you recommend to provide that protection?
Well, let me share a story with you that that really increased my embrace of trust. When my father died, he named my mother as trustee, and it took Mom about 3 weeks to figure out that she had no idea what she was doing. The important thing about that was that we went shopping for a corporate fiduciary, basically to act as her agent and do all the back office work. And in the process of shopping that around to all the familiar names that you've heard about literally all across the country, I kept discovering that the fees they were quoting were remarkably low, so much so that I kept wondering, what am I missing? And long story short, what I discovered was that when Dad was alive and paying an investment advisor, one of those firms that's no longer in existence, Dad was paying between 3 and 4 times as much in the stated and then the hidden fees to the investment advisor than what Mama is paying now to a well-known corporate fiduciary for essentially the same investment advice plus all of the back office work. And long story short, based on that experience, I have literally taken my own portfolio and created a fully funded, revocable inter vivos trust simply because I'm an investment moron, I know I need the help, and I think I'm getting a far better deal from the corporate fiduciary than I was getting from an investment advisor. Now, that's just the one personal aspect. Here's the other side of that. When Dad was still alive, I literally begged him to leave my share of anything that's left in trust. Because, you know, I worry that one of these days I will write something, it will be wrong, you will rely on it, you'll get sued, and then I will get sued. And frankly, I like the notion of a third-party trust that provides me with creditor protection. I don't know how self-settled trusts are going to go, but I think the history is very robust that a trust under my parents' estate plan for my benefit with a standard issue vanilla spendthrift protection is going to protect that property from my creditors. And so in that regard, I would guess that any beneficiary who has professional liability, if they understand how spendthrift provisions operate, would favor having that protection. The third reality that I'm confronting, I don't know whether you guys have gotten to that stage in your life, but, you know, I've gotten to that age at which something just doesn't work right at a particular hour of the day, and I think, oh, man, this is early onset of, you know, Alzheimer's or something of that nature, and I realize that sooner or later I'm going to lose the ability to manage my own wealth. And frankly, one of the reasons that I really like having created a funded, revocable inter vivos trust is that it is in place to take over the management when I no longer should be teaching my classes. So I like all of that. The fourth thing that I think is really going to become important is I'm dismayed at these dynasty trusts that ostensibly are going to last. You know, Florida thought they would be reasonable and cabin their legislation to just 360 years. To me, the really extraordinary value of a trust is the ability to build flexibility into the document that you craft. And I don't know of another vehicle that is as easy to make flexible, or for that matter, something that Reed pointed out a minute ago, the portability of a trust, the ability to just literally pick it up and move it to another jurisdiction if circumstances where you originally did your planning prove to be less desirable in the future. When you take this package of rationales, you know, we've talked about the theoretical use of trust, but to me, just in the last decade or so...
Carol Reed? comments?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I find sort of trusts are certainly as robust as Jeff said, except for one class of client, those who are beneficiaries of them. I represent a lot of sort of people who are beneficiaries of trusts established in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And the one thing they do in their estate plans for their children, no trusts. They hate them. Some of the wealthiest families in America are leaving stuff not in trust at all.
That's because those trusts were not drafted with the kinds of flexibility, the ability to remove and replace a trustee that's not performing. And they just weren't very good trusts relative to what we can do today.
Yep, mandatory income, no principal, trustees for life, usually lawyers associated with their grandfathers in their law firms. There's been a lot of reaction, again, from clients I see who's like, whatever I have, like if I get any shares of the family company, sell them. That's too much trouble. And the second is get rid of the trust in the estate plan. We don't want them. I'll trust my children. It's their problem.
I don't know about you, but I've got a lot more, and I hate to use the word dysfunctional because that's so overused, but it seems that one out of every three children has a problem. It's either a disability, it's a drug issue, it's a spendthrift issue. It is some reason why mama or daddy did not want to leave it outright. And they're very good reasons. And so, I mean, that alone would be enough to dictate a trust in many families.
Yeah. And Reed, isn't the trust pretty much dead in the UK?
The trust, it's ironic, England, trusts were invented in England, but their use is so limited by the UK tax law now, it's sort of appalling to a lot of English lawyers. And it has to do with the way the income taxes and the inheritance slash gift tax, even though it's not denominated as such, work to penalize the use of discretionary trusts. They're really not favored in the English tax law system at all. But the same is true in Canada and Australia and other places where trusts come from. But there is good news in England. A few weeks ago, they extended their rule against perpetuities from 80 years to 125.
Ooh.
So it's like they got nothing on Florida yet, but at least
yeah,
they're making a little progress.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
What are people using in lieu of trusts to accomplish the things that we would do here using a trust? Are they without any alternative?
No, I mean, you can use testamentary trusts. They're still used. There are certain provisions for trust for minor beneficiaries and spouses that are tax favored, but for the most part, they don't use them at all. I mean, I don't do English estate planning, so I can't tell you exactly what they're doing. What people are doing, of course, I see it mostly in the tax havens where the use of the trust is robust from people from countries that don't have trust law, still quite strong in the use of discretionary trusts.
But Mr. Moore, New York and many other states have decoupled from the federal system by enacting their own estate or inheritance taxes. How significant are these taxes? How are you advising your clients to minimize them?
Well, the decoupled state death taxes are going to give those of us who are lawyers in the room work for years, because one thing I've seen in common with these state statutes is they've got a mistake somewhere in all of them. And just to give you a little anecdote, we had a statute, a decoupled pickup tax statute in Illinois, where they said the Illinois estate tax would be based on the credit as it would have been computed and allowed under Section 2011 of the Internal Revenue Code. We had a client who died in a year in which there was no more state death tax credit. And we looked at that and we said, or actually it was in the year, one of the years in the phase down of the state death tax credit. We looked at that and said, If we don't ask for any state death tax credit on our federal estate tax return, that credit was never allowed. There's actually court decisions that support this. We had a big previously taxed property credit in that estate, so we really weren't paying much federal estate tax. So we said, all right, we're not going to elect the state death tax credit. We then litigated this case with Illinois. We won at the trial court. We lost at the Court of Appeal. We got a petition in to review it. And at the Illinois Supreme Court, they were interested in it. We finally settled it with the Department of Revenue. So it's just an example. This is why it's good to be a lawyer when you can win a case based on a letter or two in a statute. These cases are everywhere out there. I mean, if you just look at, for example, I was looking at the Minnesota estate tax statute. Minnesota has a decoupled pickup tax, and it's quite clear their tax applies. No gaming on allowed versus allowable and this sort of thing. But in their statute, it talks about when you have to file a return. And there's an argument to be made that if there's no federal estate tax required, if you work your way through the statute, maybe no Minnesota return is required. That may not be right, but that's just an example of what I'm seeing out there. So one planning opportunity is if you've got one of these estates you're administering, look really carefully at your statute. And you'd be surprised at the number of cases from around the country that are now beginning to surface looking at these little technical issues about whether they got it right or not. And judges oftentimes have been sympathetic to this. You'll see weird situations in which, like, the Minnesota estate tax may be way higher than the federal just because, for example, there's a previously taxed property credit. Or in 2010, when there's no federal estate tax, at least for the moment, the state death taxes look sort of ridiculous and out of proportion to the fact that there's no federal estate tax. But other things we're seeing is, of course, move. I mean, for example, Illinois has, it doesn't have a decoupled tax this year. It's gone. But when it did, you could just move to Wisconsin and not have the problem. You know, again, somebody who lives in Minnesota can just move over the border to Wisconsin and not have a problem. New York, obviously, that's well known to people here about how you do that. A second thing we've seen all the time is, it's interesting, when states enacted their pickup tax legislation, nobody enacted a gift tax. So you just give it away the moment before death. If we're in a world where there's federal estate tax, it doesn't make a difference. If there isn't federal estate tax, but there is a federal gift tax, the planning is a little different. But I've been in a lot of situations where we've made deathbed gifts or gifts within a year of death. The gift tax you pay comes back into the state calculation because it would be included under Section 2035B, but the gift itself is out, so you avoid paying the state death tax on that. So think carefully about deathbed gifts. Have power of attorney in place, or have your agent, you know, have your trustee of your REV trust be able to make gifts. So that's another strategy is deathbed gifts as well. So we've seen those are a couple of different things that we've seen going on in this and doing a lot of planning to begin to think about it, because it really is a voluntary tax, especially with the deathbed gifts. I mean, the numbers are compelling to get the gifted property out of the estate.
I'm curious, does anybody think that if 2011 comes back on January 1st when Congress fails to prevent the sunset, will states recouple, or is this horse out of the barn? Or are we stuck with this Byzantine patchwork system that grew up in the wake of the repeal of 2011?
Oh, I look forward to state legislatures trying to rewrite their statutes again, because they'll make mistakes again, and there'll be just that much more to fun to have with this situation. Again, look, you'd be surprised at sort of the sloppy drafting you get in these state statutes and how they work. I mean, I think Illinois was surprised that its estate tax went away in 2010. I mean, there was a situation, and you probably know about this, in Washington State for many years. They just kept administering their tax as if it was decoupled, but in fact somebody once looked at it and said, no, in fact, we don't actually have a tax, and there was a class action, and it had to refund hundreds of millions of dollars to Washington estates who had paid this tax. Well, everybody just kind of went along listening to the Department of Revenue. So as a result, Washington enacted its own standalone estate tax, has the most expensive estate tax in the country now. So you figure, well, we got no income tax, we got to collect it some other way, and we got the richest guys in America living here, so they can afford it.